I'm now going to read to you from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 11, commencing at verse 2. When John heard in prison what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me." As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. "What did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? If not, what did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? No. Those who wear fine clothes are in kings' palaces. Then what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet, this is the one about whom it is written, 'I will send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' I tell you the truth. Among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet he who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he." I'm going to read to you from Psalm 46. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see the works of the Lord, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. In Nelson Mandela's autobiography, he wrote these words: "Strong convictions are the secret of surviving deprivation. Your spirit can be full even when your stomach is empty." I'm going to read you something that has caused me quite a bit of concern this morning. Yesterday, I spotted, one of my friends had sent it to me, a letter that the Methodist Church has written to the new government, asking them that they would hope that in their policies they would think about the poor and so forth. And so I shared it. And I've been horrified by the response. And I'm going to read to you part of a response. And as I read it to you, I want you to just think what you've been doing as a church during the period that this person writes about. This is the paragraph. "For 15 years, I have never seen a church open its doors to the homeless at night, offering a safe house, with exception to an area I've just moved to, which will be doing so from January for a month, once per week. You as a church, have been quiet all these years to the government, and if you haven't, you certainly haven't shared it with the public. And then it goes on to say, if organisations like yours would only see what the British public really want, how they have suffered, and how your assumption that you think being part of a political organisation that makes decisions on their behalf, who have no idea what it's like for the average working class Brit because they're just like ants to them, then perhaps people would start thinking the church actually supports communities. I suspect you're probably as shocked as I am. Because if you look at any town, village, city, it's normally the church that seems to be the ones that does the supporting. So for somebody to have gone through 15 years of their life and never noticed says to me two things. One, they're pretty blind. And secondly, we've probably not been shouting loudly enough. And once you can get, I won't read the rest of it because you will be mortified. It followed the comments from somebody else who told me about 2,000 years of everything that the church apparently had done wrong. And it struck me how much ignorance there is out there. There was something else in it that began to needle me. And you can see how much I've changed my sermon this morning, because this came in the middle of the night, apparently. I think at 4:28 a.m. So somebody was obviously very bothered to write an essay at that time, but there you go. When I taught her, she didn't write her essays, I can assure you. Something that really began to bother me was the notion that comes through in there that actually, A, it's the church that's let it happen, and actually, that the church should do something about it. There's no acceptance that others might do something about it. Now, I've read that to you this morning, in a sense, because I'm sharing something that I don't agree with. But also to start looking and analysing the challenge that that gives us. Each one of us would be able to name no end of charitable organisations that are faith-based. A lot of you are involved in them. And you have given not 15 years, but 30 years, 40 years, 50 years to delivering that service. So it feels a bit like a smack when someone hasn't noticed that effort that has been going in. But it also shows us how empty people's lives are. And that takes me back to that quote from Nelson Mandela. Strong convictions are the secret of surviving deprivation. Your spirit can be full even when your stomach is empty. And it shows us that people have lost that spiritual dimension. Something is missing in their lives. And so they choose to blame an organization that they're not even a part of. I want to tell you the story of another person, Papa Panoff. Jesus tells an old man in a dream that he will visit him on Christmas Day. All day, Papa Panoff watches for Jesus. While he does so, he shares his meal with a street sweeper, gives a young mother some warm shoes for her baby, offers hospitality to passers-by. At the end of the day, he sat saddened and disappointed. Why? Because Jesus hadn't visited him. Papa Panoff fell asleep again, only to hear in his dreams that Jesus did indeed visit him, for he was present in all those whom Papa Panoff had helped. If someone of faith doesn't recognize when they're putting that faith into action, and by putting that faith into action, they are doing what Jesus wants them to do, then what hope of those people on the other side who don't know Jesus have of knowing where it came from? It's a tricky one. If we go out shouting, screaming, and preaching in the streets, then we're called fanatics. If we stay silent, then we're apparently ignorant. That balance is a massive balance for us to find. How do we get the good news of Jesus out there? How do people see and feel and hear it? You know, there is a thing that we sort of say, isn't it? If someone perceives something, then it's true. So if someone perceives that they're being bullied, they're being bullied. If someone perceives that they're being the victim of racism, it's racism. If someone perceives that they're being the victim of a man being chosen over a woman, it's sexism. The perception in our society, that word means that it must be true. And it doesn't matter sometimes how much we argue that it's not true. If they believe it's true, they believe it's true. I haven't replied to any of those comments, nor will I, because I am going to be beating against someone who has already formed their opinion. And, you know, if I turn around and said, well, actually, Thetford URC, every week now, every Thursday, 2.5 years, has given soup and a roll, tea and coffee, biscuits to anybody who comes through the door without charging, I'll sound defensive. If I turn round and say that the charity that I chair, Fincham's Farm for the Addicts for Alcohol and Drug Related, has been doing work for people for 20 odd years, I'll be being defensive. So we're a little trapped. And we're a little trapped at a time when we shouldn't be trapped. Because Christmas is a big moment. 2 years ago, when I was visiting a young patient, he was 21, at West Suffolk Hospital in my chaplaincy role there, we were coming up to Christmas. And there was a slight possibility that he could be discharged in time for Christmas. So I went along the line, oh, you know, if you do go home at Christmas, how are you going to spend Christmas? And he said, well, we've often gone to my grandma's, so I suspect we'll be going to grandma's. So then he said, what will you be doing on Christmas Day then? I said, well, a bit like you, family will be there, you know, and in the morning we'll go to church. And he went, church? I went, yeah. Has Christmas got something to do with religion then? He wasn't being funny. He'd not done nativity plays when he was at school. He didn't know the Christmas story. He does now know the Christmas story. But that's what we as a body of faith are up against. We cannot assume that people understand the magnitude of this change that is coming, this opportunity of good news. We have to be strong. In our gospel reading, we focus on John in his prison cell. Nothing left to hold on to, nothing left to give. And he reaches out to Jesus at that time. He reaches out because he knows that that's where the strength can come from, that that's where the hope will come from. Everything that he had been doing, all the preparation, was all focused on Jesus coming. And he was assured of that. He knew that that was a time. Advent, a season of preparation, a season of reflection, of looking into our hearts, acknowledging our times of doubt and our despair. In a sense, that I read you, that arrived at 4:28 a.m. this morning, is the right sort of challenge that we need to reflect on during this period of Advent. It's that we need to focus on. How can we change those ingrained attitudes? We cannot ever assume that we're going to get a sympathetic ear from everybody that we move and see and live with and focus on. We're not going to get a sympathetic ear. Many of them think we're going to be that little group of strange people who do something in that strange building that's called what? A church? And yet, here we are, sitting with the answer to the big thing that can change their lives. So in a sense, what we've got to do is dust ourselves off, take it on the chin, pray very, very hard, and realize what a fantastic opportunity we have of changing those people's lives by our actions, by our thoughts, by our words, by the things that we do. But don't expect them necessarily to notice or even say thank you. You have a gift coming on Christmas Day. Let's celebrate that and let's take that news out, because every promise is fulfilled in the coming of the Messiah. He may not arrive in the way that we expect. He may not be seen in the ways that we think he'll be seen. But we can trust in that promise. And I'll go back to that quote from Nelson Mandela. Strong convictions are the secret of surviving deprivation. Your spirit can be full even when your stomach is empty.